Hello, people of the world. You're listening to the Jossom Life Podcast, and I'm your host, Jeff Allen Wang. First off, I'd like to thank everyone for joining me on my first ever podcast episode. I don't have the entire project of this mapped out, and I'm not entirely sure what direction I want to take this podcast, but I am a big believer of starting new projects and not worrying too much about making everything perfect, because you fall into this paralysis of analysis state where you end up thinking too much and you don't start anything. So my goal here is simple with this podcast. I want to share knowledge. Much like my blog, I want to keep it simple, very basic, very kind of unfiltered thoughts kind of theme. I won't be doing any frills or fancy editing, mostly because I don't know how to do that. It'll just be me here, microphone, and my voice, and hopefully I can talk about interesting concepts. Anyways, this first episode is called Why Superstars Are Overrated and How Competition Sucks. In the future, I do plan to make a contrasting episode talking about why you should try to strive to be a superstar and how competition can be healthy in your life, but that'll be later on. All right. So superstars. Alright, so before I start talking about superstars, I want to classify who these people are. In basketball, the superstars of a team are the particular players that are immediately criticized for a team's loss or they are praised for a team's win. They're most likely to be the ones getting an MVP award, and they usually take on the most pressure to help make the team succeed. A team can have one superstar or sometimes multiple superstars. In life, we often think of a superstar person as someone who is really popular, skilled, successful, and talented in their specific industry or field, more so than the general population. So these people are the ones that lead the teams and help make the world a better place. So think of Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, or Steve Jobs. So why do I want to talk about superstars? Why do I think they are overrated? Wouldn't you want a superstar team? That's generally how people think of building the strongest chance of success, isn't it? If you get the best of the best and put them all in one team. Well, an evolutionary biologist at Purdue University named William Muir studied chickens. So William Muir, he wanted to understand productivity, something probably a lot of us struggle with, and so he devised an experiment called the super chicken model. Now, it's quite easy to study the productivity of chickens because you just count the number of eggs. So what Muir did was he created two flocks. Out of these two flocks, one flock he dubbed the average chickens. This flock of chickens he didn't interfere with, he left them alone, let them live through their natural life cycle for 6 generations. Now each generation of chickens lasted about 7 to 8 years, so this experiment lasted roughly 42 to 48 years. Next, along with the average flock, he created another flock of chickens. He dubbed this one the super chicken flock, consisting of the most productive individual chickens selected and forcibly put together. He took the most productive chickens, the chickens that laid the most eggs from several flocks, and put them together, the best of the best, the most skilled players, the super chicken team equivalent of a Musk, Bezos, and Jobs. So, after 6 generations, what happened to this super chicken flock? All of the chickens died, except 3. These super chickens pecked each other to death. Yes, they were the most productive individual chickens, but when you forcibly take them away from their flock and put them together, forcing them to be this new super chicken flock, it didn't work. Rather than focusing on their own productivity, these chickens were more concerned with being at the top. They weren't used to being dubbed average now in a super chicken flock, and they wanted to rise to the top and be the best of the best like they were before. Now, this super chicken model is still used today in school, in life, in organizations. It's this concept that the most skilled, the most productive people are also the most valued. It's this concept that to succeed in life, then, to be productive, also means competing with everyone else. Success, then, to some people, also translated to the failure of others. It's thought that if everyone in the flock is dead, then you have to be on top. But it's not very inspiring, is it? Now, MIT did similar experiments to kind of prove this idea that the best of the best put together isn't necessarily the best strategy. So MIT gave out these difficult problems to solve to groups, student groups. Again, the groups that did the best in solving these problems were not the groups that had individually the highest IQs, nor was it the groups with the highest aggregate IQ. None of those groups performed the best. The most successful team, instead, had three distinct characteristics. Number one, social sensitivity to others, which is essentially empathy. Number two, equal effort, so no one individual dominated the group. It's this concept, the absence of a leader, by making everyone a leader. And then number three, these successful groups had more women. Picking individuals who are supposed to be quote-unquote superstars and putting them all in one group, that's not how you efficiently build a team that works well together. Yes, in an ideal world, you want a group, an organization, with the most talented people, the best of the best in their field. But that's not how you build a group that cares for each other and a group that works well with each other. And this is why competition, in a way, sucks. Many people will want to succeed so much that they get caught up in this corrupt concept of competition where success means other people are worse than you. So going back to the super chicken model, the flock consisted of individually productive chickens, but as a whole group, as an entire flock, they were terrible because none of the chickens knew each other. They were individually selected from several other flocks and forced to work together, but that's not how it works. Now, imagine if you took the top performing employees of many companies, took them from their current workplace, and then put them together and told them, here, form a successful company. Right away, it's going to be a massive struggle, despite how individually talented these people are, because none of them know each other. And there's now a scramble for superiority, to fighting to be on the top of the pecking order, fighting for roles in the company, establishing leadership, all of this, right? Management will be a mess. And why? Because these people don't know each other. There's no empathy, no social connectivity, the other two things that made groups successful, and thus there's going to be little chance for success. Another real life example of the super chicken model is our friend groups. Now, think of your friends. Individually, every person in your friend group has their own unique traits and personality and talents and hobbies and things they do that make them who they are. For example, in my friend group, I have people who love working out, who love playing basketball. I have friends who are very English savvy, science savvy, interested in a vast majority of things. Of course, there are other people out there that might be better than my friends at certain things. There are other people who are who's better than me at basketball, at school, at business, right? But if I replaced the friends in my friend group every time I thought there was a superstar out there, then my friend group wouldn't really work. Replacing certain individuals every time with a new superstar In the long term, this friend group will break up because we don't have the proper time to build a strong relationship. And that's the same reason the Super Chicken model fails, and that's the same reason the Super Chicken model doesn't work. So how do we fix the Super Chicken model? How do we build a friend group, a organization, a company, a business with people who aren't necessarily super chickens, but build a successful organization that works well with each other? Well, there's a very simple and obvious solution, and it comes in two parts. Part one is being more helpful and caring to everyone in the organization. And number two, forgetting about competition and understanding that everyone has value to bring to the table. So let me address the first point, being more helpful and caring. Now, Adam Grant, an organizational psychologist who is the best professor at UPenn Wharton School of Business, he also has a TED Talk with millions of views. He has a book, a very great book, called Give and Take. Now, in his book, he studies three types of people: givers, matchers, and takers. Now, the name itself is kind of self-describing, but I'll give a brief explanation of what these type of people are. You have takers, who are the selfish people in this world, who are only looking out to succeed for themselves. They're not willing to give up their own success to help out other people, and they are easily willing to backstab anyone who gets in their way. Then you have the matchers. It's this concept of an eye for an eye. You help me, I help you. If you backstab me, I backstab you. You know, they match, they reciprocate whatever is given to them. And then finally, you have the givers. These people are selfless, the opposite of takers. They are very willing to help out anyone in need. They are very willing to offer guidance, advice, their support. Now, Adam Grant studied these three types of people, and he wanted to know who the most successful group of people are in this world. And he found something very interesting. So Adam Grant looked at these three types of people and wanted to know who the most successful group was. At the very bottom, the least successful people, he found, interesting enough, were the givers. The givers were the least successful people in the world. And then he looked at the other end of the spectrum. Who were the most successful people in this world? And he found something even more interesting. It was the givers again. Now, he spends the whole book distinguishing between what it meant to be a successful giver and what it meant to be an unsuccessful giver. And I won't go into too much detail about that, but it's the understanding of being a giver, but also being smart about who you offer guidance to. It's between helping out your friends selflessly versus helping random strangers on the street who might exploit you. It's understanding that if you are a giver, you shouldn't be associating yourself with takers who will exploit you, but instead, you need to be a giver and surround yourself with matchers and other givers. When I finished reading Give and Take, it was a very important time for me because it gave me a total paradigm shift, a total perspective change. When I went into business school last fall, I had this misconception that for me to succeed in the business world, I had to be cutthroat and I had to exploit other people to make profits. Now, I didn't like that idea and I didn't want to be that guy. But Adam Grant gave me a solution that I had been searching for my whole life. If you surround yourself with other matchers and givers, and you yourself are a giver, then you can foster a community that supports one another. Being a helpful person and surrounding yourself with other helpful people is what leads to success. And I wanted that to be a reality. My whole life, I wanted that to be the truth. And it was so reassuring to know that it was. Yes, some takers in this world, they can be successful. But if you look at America's most infamous scandal, the Enron scandal, you'll know that it doesn't lead to a good result. Some takers can be successful. If you look at America's most infamous scandal, the Enron scandal, you'll know that takers don't have long-term success. So Kenneth Lay, he was the CEO of Enron, and for years, he was hailed as one of America's greatest CEOs and leaders. You know, he was rich, he had a great company, one of the leading businesses in America, and he donated to charity. He had a great personality, and a lot of people looked up to him. But what people didn't know was that Kenneth Lay was actually a taker. Enron eventually went bankrupt because Kenneth Lay was actually exploiting the system. He was falsifying records, and every time he was being audited, he was faking the whole system. They were essentially not conducting any legitimate business. And in the end, Kenneth Lay was up for trial, and his company went defunct, bankrupt, basically disappeared. All the money they had wasn't even there. He ruined many people's lives because a lot of people were invested in this business. And in the end, Kenneth Lay died a very sad death of a heart attack. Takers can create short-term success. That is true. But in the long term, success means fostering a community of helpful and caring people. Another real-life example in the business world is Ray Dalio. Now, Ray Dalio is the CEO and founder of Bridgewater Associates, and he is widely considered the greatest hedge fund manager in history. Despite how great Ray Dalio is, he understands that everyone brings value, everyone brings a different perspective to the organization. Ray Dalio is a big advocate of radical transparency and radical criticism, and he also has a book on that, a relatively new book called Principles. I'll link that in the show notes so you can check that out for yourself. Now, Ray Dalio, every time they have a meeting, every person has a say. Everyone has a vote in what happens in the company. And Ray Dalio willingly accepts criticisms from anyone in the organization. One time, he received an email from one of his employees telling him, "Ray, you deserve a D- for your presentation." Now imagine talking to a billionaire, somebody who's worth tens of billions of dollars, your boss, and telling him, "Hey, you get a D- for your presentation today." But not with Ray Dalio. He willingly accepts it. He wants to foster a community where not everyone is competing with each other, but instead, everyone brings value to the table and everyone helps each other, but forgetting about the pecking order, but instead focusing on improving the organization as a whole. So what Ray Dalio did was he sent that email, the email criticizing him, to the whole company. Everyone received it, whether you were an intern or a top level executive. Everyone got the email that Ray Dalio received, and Ray said, "Hey, how can I improve?" And it takes a lot of humility to do what he did, but it's because Ray understands that the super chicken model doesn't work. Instead, let's forget about competition within your organization. Because if you care about your own organization's success, you'll understand that you need to listen to everyone on the team. Number two factor of fixing the super chicken model is understanding that everyone brings value to the table and forgetting about competition within your own organization. It's very important to understand that it's competition doesn't matter within your own organization. Because obviously, if you're competing against other teams, yes, you want to be better than them, obviously. But let's look at the NBA teams again. So in the NBA Finals right now, we have the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Indisputably, the best players on the Golden State Warriors are Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. However, if you were to create an NBA team, a superstar team, with five Steph Currys, I would guarantee that that team would not win any NBA championships. Yes, Steph Curry is a very good player. He's a great player. But there are things he lacks. On the Golden State Warriors, you need Klay Thompson, who is a great shooter, but who isn't necessarily good at dribbling. You have great role players like Jordan Bell and Looney, who are taller players and who can defend and can hustle. Yes, Steph Curry is a superstar, but if you only had Steph Curry on your team, it wouldn't work, because you need other people who bring different skill sets. Everyone brings value to the table. Another real-life example in the business world is Ray Dalio. Now, Ray Dalio is the CEO and founder of Bridgewater Associates, and he is widely considered the greatest hedge fund manager in history. Despite how great Ray Dalio is, he understands that everyone brings value, everyone brings a different perspective to the organization. Ray Dalio is a big advocate of radical transparency and radical criticism, and he also has a book on that, a relatively new book called Principles. I'll link that in the show notes so you can check that out for yourself. Now, Ray Dalio, every time they have a meeting, every person has a say. Everyone has a vote in what happens in the company. And Ray Dalio willingly accepts criticisms from anyone in the organization. One time, he received an email from one of his employees telling him, "Ray, you deserve a D- for your presentation." Now imagine talking to a billionaire, somebody who's worth tens of billions of dollars, your boss, and telling him, "Hey, you get a D- for your presentation today." But not with Ray Dalio. He willingly accepts it. He wants to foster a community where not everyone is competing with each other, but instead, everyone brings value to the table and everyone helps each other, but forgetting about the pecking order, but instead focusing on improving the organization as a whole. So what Ray Dalio did was he sent that email, the email criticizing him, to the whole company. Everyone received it, whether you were an intern or a top level executive. Everyone got the email that Ray Dalio received, and Ray said, "Hey, how can I improve?" And it takes a lot of humility to do what he did, but it's because Ray understands that the super chicken model doesn't work. Instead, let's forget about competition within your organization. Because if you care about your own organization's success, you'll understand that you need to listen to everyone on the team. So to anyone listening to the end of this podcast, I'd like to first of all thank you for listening to the whole thing, because it shows me that you are willing to be helpful and you're willing to support me in my endeavors and my personal projects that I am passionate about. But also it shows me that you care about getting rid of the super chicken model, and you care about helping other people in this world. Now that you've kind of listened to me preach about this, I hope you'll look at the world in a different way, like I have, just a little bit, and understand that everyone brings value to the table. It means supporting everyone in this world in their own personal projects, and it also means understanding that being helpful and being a giver isn't a crutch. It's actually how we build success, because if you can build an organization that fosters being selfless, then the world will just be a much better place. And I think the world will always need selfless people. So thank you again for joining me on my podcast journey. This is the Jossom Life podcast. I also have a blog, by the same name. I'm sure most people have heard of my blog if you are listening to this podcast. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more to come.